Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. My stories. I've always lived in Oklahoma. We have lived in the same house for 20 years. My dad had previously had the house built during his first marriage and then later moved back a year after I was born. My dad and his family have always lived in this area. My grandparents used to live in the same house where my uncle is now. Another uncle used to live behind our house also, another to the left of our house. There was an old two-story house that sat next to my grandparents' old house. They lived in it at one point. We come from a large family of Choctaw Indians. My grandparents had 8 children, my dad being the oldest. My dad and his brothers have always told us kids about this ghost bear that has been seen in the area and in the nearest town. One of my uncles once saw it face to face. He was making himself a snack in the kitchen when he looked up and the face of this bear was pressed to the window looking right at him. My dad always told us that this bear was white and that it could stand and walk on 2 legs. One night, all of them were outside and they saw it standing up in the back of my grandpa's work truck. I only know of 2 other times where this thing has been noticed, one being just down the road from me and another in the town where I went to school. The one that happened down the road from me was a little girl who was playing hide and seek with her brothers. She went around the barn and ran right into this creature. The one in the next town happened in the late 90s and the early 2000s. There was a house that stood in town where people claimed that a light came up on the living room every night when the house had not had any electricity for years. A group of teens went up to this house and this thing had chased one boy all the way down the large hill that this house had sat on. These were the last known sightings of this thing. My second story happened to me personally in the same house that was mentioned before. The room that I was in at the time was previously the garage. I had been sleeping in this room for a couple of years before I started to see things. I shared a room with one of my sisters. We both had the same encounter the first time. We both saw this black mist come from the attic entrance and form into a black shadow figure. This figure stands at about 6 feet tall. We kept seeing this shadow man every night. One night my sister had fallen asleep before me and I was lying in bed and all of a sudden I feel my feet slowly rise up and slam into the bed. I tried to roll over and I couldn't. When I was trying to move, I felt a hand on the middle of my back and it whispered my name. After that, my parents switched rooms with us, and we didn't see anything for another few years. When I became pregnant at 17 is when it all started again. I was about 3 to 4 months pregnant. I was asleep in bed and was awakened by something. I couldn't move. The only thing that I was able to move were my eyes. I'm not 100% sure if this was the shadow man or if it is what some Native Americans tribe believed to be an out-of-body experience. The third happened only a few months ago. I was sitting in the living room watching TV when I looked down the hall and saw a woman dressed in early 1800s style of clothing. I watched this lady walk into the hallway and back into the hall towards where my room is now. I told my mom and aunt about this and described what the woman looked like. They showed me a picture a couple of days later of my great-great-grandmother, and it was then that I realized that is who I saw. I still see the shadow man walking around my house from time to time, and in the past couple of days, I have been noticing what looks like a white lace walking on our front porch. I don't know if it is because I'm Native American that I can see these things, or if it is because they trust me for them to show themselves to me. The man in the red plaid shirt. I had been living in Santa Barbara back in 1993 when I found myself suddenly unemployed. After several months without luck finding a job, I started going to the local temp agencies for work. One by one, they turned me down, telling me that with my engineering degree, they weren't going to be able to place me because I was overqualified for anything they had to offer. So, out of the 7 temp agencies in town, the first 6 had turned me away without even taking my resume. However, the 7th place not only took me in, they actually gave me a job. And I found out later that this last place was run by 2 ladies who both had strong psychic abilities, and many of their workers also had psychic abilities. So, anyway, at the job they got me, I became friends with this one girl who was a strong psychic. She would tell me what I had for breakfast that day or what I would find in my mail when I got home, stuff like that. It was kind of freaky. I was really into using the Ouija board at that time and have since learned why no one should ever do that. And that was this girl's main practice. So we would get together all the time and use the Ouija board, which she had specially made. It was round and made of wood and elaborately decorated. It was actually very nice as a piece of art. Well, this girl's background story was that in every incarnation she had been through, she had always ended up being killed by this evil spirit who was jealous of her relationship with her soulmate. Apparently also, she had always been killed with the same jewel dagger. So in this incarnation, she said she had identified her soulmate and the evil spirit who happened to be married to each other this time around, and she had a photograph of them with this woman having a jewel dagger stuck in her belt as some kind of decoration perhaps. Anyway, so take this part of the story as you will. So we were doing the board one night and we were talking with her guardian angel. Suddenly an evil spirit took over the board and started swearing at us and threatening us. So we decided to send it away and call it a night. At this point, it was about 2 in the morning. We were discussing what had just happened and I mentioned to my friend that I would try to help her in any way I could spiritually to save her from her repeating fate. She thanked me and I gathered my things and left. I was about 10 steps outside her door when suddenly someone screamed in my ear. It was almost like someone ran past me because the volume was very low and then very loud and very low again. I spun around, but of course, no one was there. My friend lived in an apartment complex, but being 2 in the morning, all was quiet around. I was scared and went back to my friend's place. I thought I knew what I had heard, but we brought out the board again and called for her guardian angel to confirm it. What I had heard was, "Don't help her, you jerk." So now I'm scared out of my wits, thinking her evil spirit is now after me. It took a while to calm me down, and my friend said that she would ask her guardian angel to accompany me home to make sure I was safe. I kind of poo-pooed that in my mind, thinking that wasn't possible, but agreed. So I get in my car and start driving home. Several minutes later, when I was in the freeway of all places, what should happen but suddenly a man, her guardian angel, I assume, appeared sitting in the passenger seat of my car, solid as you or I. He was about 35, blonde hair, wearing a red plaid shirt and blue jeans. His body was turned towards mine and he smiled at me and waved and then disappeared. I thought to myself, huh? What do you know? He did follow me home. That's cool. Then, when I got back to my apartment and parked my car, this man appeared again, solid as before, sitting cross-legged on the hood of my car, again smiling and waving at me. Then the next morning, as I was taking a shower, suddenly 2 eyeballs appeared in the wall of my shower and looked around, then disappeared. That freaked me out the most, but only because I was naked at the time in the shower. I assumed the eyeballs belonged to this guardian angel. So nothing bad happened to me in regards to the evil spirit, and I never saw the red plaid man again. Many people ask me, weren't you scared when he showed up in your car when you were going 70 miles an hour? And I say, no, actually a sense of peace and calm came over me each time he appeared, and I knew that I was safe with him. It was a very interesting experience. The Ghost of Buffalo Ridge. One of the infamous spots around here is Buffalo Ridge, a hilly road that's just a bit northwest of Cincinnati and Cleves. It's actually home to the Mitchell Memorial Forest, a park complete with a natural trail, lake for fishing, and a playground for the kiddies. Woohoo! Not only that, but supposedly this road is where Charles Manson himself spent his Cincinnati years. I say supposedly since I know his family lived around here at some point, but I never really looked into whether or not he grew up around Cleves. Not that it's important to the story anyways. Well, the urban legends of this road are outrageous. Stories range from being chased across the road at night by white vans to phantom cars from failed gang initiations, an evil dog with glowing green eyes, ghosts that run across the road searching for their missing parts for all eternity, and most importantly, the crematorium. You see, the urban legends say this road was the site of a corrupt crematorium that dropped bodies out in the woods, blah, blah, blah. And now supposedly bodies are still out there somewhere. Well, in high school, I actually had an English teacher who told me that one time he and his friend drove down there, pulled over, and just happened to open a random barn door for whatever reason and found chickens hanging from the ceiling on chains and their blood being collected on leaves below. So they ran back to their car, and of course, Gravedigger or some other monstrous truck comes tearing out of a driveway and chases him all the way out of Cleves. Now that's excitement. That's all well and good, but as soon as I found out from personal research, there was never a crematorium there. What is there to this day, however, is the ruins of Cincinnati's first planetarium hidden in the woods. Back in 1911, it appears that the Chamber of Commerce building burnt down and six people died, and they decided to repurpose the building materials and took out the stones and dumped them out there, hoping to build a planetarium. This was in the 1930s. However, they ran out of money, and what was left behind was just a lot of debris and ruins, which, as time went by, people changed it from the planetarium to the crematorium. Despite this research, I still wanted to have my own encounter with whatever or whoever was out there. So I went with a couple of my friends that were new to the area over to Buffalo Ridge. These friends, being my old friend Jonathan, who's the same age as me and grew up in Indiana, and Kay, his now new girlfriend, I think. Well, we get there about 9 p.m. when the sun was close to setting all the way, and as usual, I have them park down the road a bit near another road, the name of which slips my mind, and walk back up to a no dumping or we'll own your butt sign, behind which is a trail leading down the woods and into the ruins of the old planetarium. Being the loser who loves to tell the local history that I am, I was talking pretty loudly about the area while Kay and Jonathan walked behind me. Both carried a couple of flashlights to see better in the thick woods, and I just toughed it out in front. Oh yeah, I'm a real man. I try. Anyways, we come to what I can only describe as the foundation of the building. A bunch of bricks and torn metal in the hillside is all I got. We sat down and started chatting it up about whatever, and a good 30 minutes passed. Jonathan and I were discussing mainly things like whether we should go get those tiny fries at Steak and Shake or an even manlier jug of root beer at the Jolly's Up in Fairfield. Around then, Kay started mumbling about how the air changed or something to that degree. So in hopes to see something spooky, I climbed down into the foundation of the old planetarium and took Jonathan's flashlight so I could navigate walking around the fallen stones and whatnot. At one point, I remember Kay saying we should get going, and by then I had already made my way to the other side of the rubble and was wanting to look around some more. But Jonathan didn't like making her nervous, so I agreed to climb back out. So being the nice guy I am, I started to make my way back across the rubble. At this point, I shined my light back up the wall I had climbed down to see Kay and Jonathan when I saw it. A man I couldn't really make out from where I was approaching the two of them, so jokingly I shouted, "Hey, better tell that guy that we aren't sacrificing babies, or drug dealers, or drug dealers sacrificing babies, and went back to my climbing across the rubble. Eventually, I made it up the wall and no one was freaking there. Annoyed, I walked back up the trail to Buffalo Ridge and found Kay crying while Jonathan hugged her. Aw. So I asked, what happened to our guest? When Jonathan starts ranting on and on about how this dude just totally came out of nowhere, walked right up to me and vanished, which made our head spin. From then on, we were pretty static, running back to the truck with Kay frightened while Jonathan was excited and I was pissed. I wanted a ghost to walk up to me and disappear, and I didn't even see it since I was walking over some flipping stones and whatnot. Never again will I look where I'm going. Okay, bad idea. So finally, the story has become one of the only real stories about ghosts we've got to talk about. But it's a fun story nonetheless. The old house. I was in the Navy and living ashore at Norfolk, Virginia in the early 70s. It was an old two-story house. The main floor had a kitchen, dining room, and living room. The second floor had a master bedroom that was nearly half the size of the house, a smaller bedroom, and a bath. One day, I was in the master bedroom, folding laundry. People came and went all the time. I had a couple of roommates, and they had friends, so the doors were seldom, if ever, locked. I heard the front door open and close and called out that I was upstairs. I heard heavy, plodding footsteps on the stairs, pausing at the bend in the middle. It was as if whomever was really tired and it was all they could do to walk up the steps. From where I was standing, I could see clearly down the hall to the top of the stairs. The footsteps continued to the top and down the hall towards me. No one was there. The steps were quite audible. At the threshold of the bedroom door, they stopped. I stood there, shaking like a leaf, then quickly exited the room. Sometime later, I returned home to find every light in the place on. A roommate was sitting in the living room, white as a sheet, holding a poker from the fireplace in front of him. I asked him what was wrong, and he said he was watching TV when the door to the outside, the former front door since the house at one time faced Chesapeake Bay, but at some time was moved across the street and turned around, so our front door had been the back door at one time and our back door the front, began turning on its own. He asked who was there and got no answer. Then the door started shaking as if someone were trying to enter but couldn't. He went to the door and called out again. No reply. He opened the door and no one was there. And the screen door was closed and latched with no breaks in the screen for someone to reach in. I told him of my experience earlier and he said he had heard footsteps as well when no one was home. He never told anyone, believing they would think him crazy. Eventually, others reported hearing strange things as well. The old house is no longer there. It was on a spit of land which has since been redeveloped with freeways, ramps, etc. Oh well. Now, there was another apartment building I lived in Huntington, West Virginia, which had several spirits. Residents in two apartments on the other end of the hall, I lived in the back, had reported seeing an old woman in a white blouse and a long black dress into their apartment, walk through an exit. At one time, this building had a landlady who owned the place from about 1911 to 1951. This could be her keeping an eye on her property. I am the senior resident in the building, which is a three-story brick apartment built in 1906, and I had moved in there in July of 1979. And people ask me, "You've been here a long time. Have you heard of this or that happening?" Well, one evening in the early 80s, a neighbor and I were playing cards. No radio, TV, or such was on. Suddenly, we heard loud noises coming from his apartment, as if it were being ransacked. Scott went to check and nothing was out of place. I have also had the feeling someone would be watching me from that apartment when no one was living there. My kitchen windows and that one form a sort of L shape. I named the spirit Casper after the cartoon character Casper, the friendly ghost since he means no harm, merely curious. And when I have this feeling of being watched, I always wave and greet him. There's also a ghost in my apartment. It was August 2nd, a hot, muggy night. The cat I had then was laying on the floor facing the closed bathroom door. This was before the internet, so I was watching TV and Muffy, was in my line of vision. Suddenly she roused herself and started a low growl, twitching her tail, looking at the closed door, then to me, back to the door. I told her there was nothing there. Like a scene from a cheap movie, I went to the door, put my hand on the doorknob and said, "See, there's nothing in there," and opened the door. Suddenly, a cold rush of air passed through me, at least 20 degrees cooler than a moment before. After that, Muffy was calm again and went back to her dozing. For a couple of years on that date, I could feel the presence. I haven't had that experience for the last few years. Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. Back in October of 2004, my girlfriend thought it would be a good idea to take me to Bachelor's Grove Cemetery a week before my birthday as one of my presents. I am really into the supernatural, so I was really excited about it. I even went and bought a digital voice recorder and got out my digital camera. We left that Saturday at about 12 p.m. I live about an hour and a half away, so I wanted to get as much out of this as possible. When we arrived, we parked across the street in the Forest Preserve parking lot, then walked across the street. There is nowhere to park other than there, and if you try to park elsewhere, you will be towed and get a ticket. The walk from there is not very far, but as we got closer to the gate, it started to feel really odd. I turned on my recorder and it would skip from 17 seconds to 23. I kept it going and we took a whole bunch of pictures. It was about 42 degrees that day and it started raining, so we hurried it up and took as many pictures as we could. While we were there, we noticed a really bizarre feeling of being watched, and I kept getting the feeling something was breathing down my neck. We decided to leave after being there about 20 minutes. It was creeping us out, and we were the only ones there. I left the recorder going till we got to the end of the trail leaving the grounds. Once we got to the car, I replayed all of our footage. I almost literally had a heart attack at what I heard. I heard a voice whisper to get out, and other things. Like at one point, I said to my girlfriend, "Take a picture of me next to here." Then you hear, almost in a taunting manner, "Yes, go ahead, take a picture." The really freaky stuff started happening after we got home. That night, now keep in mind, I'm extremely healthy and I never get sick. I felt perfect that day, and out of nowhere that night, I got a bad cough and a sore throat. There is no way possible I could get that sick for being in the cold, dressed as warm as I was for 20 minutes. Anyway, the next morning when my girlfriend came over, I was worse. I had a fever of about 101, and I had been having diarrhea. I was so sick, I could barely move. She brought her laptop over, and we viewed the pictures together. We got a couple of things on camera. We got a picture of a man by a fallen tree, a full-body apparition of a woman floating, holding what looked to be flowers. Lots of other pictures were faces and white mists. After that ordeal, things got worse. About a month after that, we moved into an apartment together, and after only 2 months, we were in a car accident. A month after that, she lost her job for no reason, followed by me losing mine. No matter how many interviews we went on, we could not find a job. That whole year was bad luck. We got sick all the time with flu bugs and had problems with our apartment. We lost our place after barely a year. We had to move in with my parents, and it was months before we found work again. I really believe the cemetery had something to do with it, because before that, we were happy and healthy. I will never go back there again. My friends want to, but I tell them they are nuts. There is something more to that place than people think. I never believed in curses or anything like that until that happened. Things have gotten a little better for us, but not perfect. It's been 2 years. I still have my voice recordings and pictures, and I listen to the strange voices still. To all of you ghost hunters out there, I would highly recommend you never go there. That place is haunted and a good find, but it's better to just leave those spirits in peace. They obviously don't want people there. The Oxford Light. Here in southwestern Ohio, perhaps the most known ghost story is The Light. It's the most cliche story ever told, and I've heard several variations of it from all over the country. It's especially hard for me to take this story seriously, since it comes straight from a college town, which are full of shenanigans. Well, to get to my point, here's our local version of a light story. This haunting comes from just outside Oxford. The story goes that two forbidden lovers would meet up a certain driveway along the road. The girl took her father's car and pulled out to the end of the road and flashed her lights three times to signal to her boyfriend to come over. One night, as he began coming down the road, a young boy was riding his bicycle on the road. The boyfriend, riding a motorcycle, didn't see the boy until it was too late. Both the boy and the boyfriend died. The girl later hung herself in the barn, of which only remnants remain. It is said that if you go to the spot where the girl would flash your lights and flash your lights three times towards the road, you can see small flashing red lights, like the reflections off a bicycle, and then a motorcycle headlight coming down the road. Some have even reported seeing many flashing lights, like at the scene of an accident, after the headlights disappears. Well, what's not to love? So for the longest time, my friends and I have been investigating this story. First, we had trouble finding the correct road. Then, for well over a year, we apparently had the wrong spot on the road. In another version of the story, the girl supposedly haunted her house also on this road, but it was burnt down. We actually found some burnt remains, but nothing I honestly think that was the real house. Just a barn with a tasteful rope hanging from a broken rafter. But finally, a friend explained to me that the way it works is you park in front of the still inhabited house on the road and flash the lights, not this empty lot we were going to. This made me awfully suspicious, so last Thursday night, my friend and I decided we were going to beat this myth. I grabbed my video camera, two walkie-talkies, and we made a plan. My friend Tony would drive, and I would get out of the car and station myself further up the road. Then Tony would get in position and flash the lights while the video camera recorded everything he saw, and I'd radio him if I saw any cars coming. We gathered the equipment and headed out. After a stop at a Burger King, we made it to Oxford Milford Road at about 9:50 p.m., which is lined with country houses and other places I thought for sure would be an obstacle. But once you're far back on that road, it's pretty dark. The houses are all downhill and covered in bushes with few house lights on, as far as I can remember. We pulled up to the correct spot and flashed our lights. Sure enough, and much to my disbelief, there it was. A single bluish-white light seemed to actually make its way down the road. I mistook it for a car and cried out, "Hey, Tony, there's a car coming. Turn your car back on. We don't want an accident." Well, luckily, he knew better. This light just faded in and out from on top of the hill, perhaps a yard away from our car, never actually coming down at us. I fumbled with my video camera the whole time. The oddest thing that Tony pointed out to me was that the light was straight ahead of us, and yet our car's windshield showed a reflection that looked like headlights when passing behind trees, or as Tony described it, like it's underwater. Well, the light faded away and we drove up the road looking for clues, and immediately drove back. However, this time we pulled into a driveway and turned around to face the direction the light would be coming from, only to find the light was already shining back at us before we even turned off our engine or even our headlights. It was odd though. The light was incredibly bright. This was obviously no idiot with a flashlight pulling our leg, and yet I was incredibly suspicious. So I gave out a war cry, and Tony charged our chariot towards the light to find nothing. Up the road, we saw a car coming, so finally I realized, okay, there must be a reflection. That's it. Cars that are coming down the road must be reflecting off something. That's it. I'm a genius. So I hopped out of the car and stood to the side of the road. Tony circled back around to the correct spot and shut the car off. He flashed his lights and we waited. He reported nothing. Then finally, I saw some headlights coming down the road and expected Tony to radio with, "Hey, Alex, there's lights," but nothing. Really, a big truck with monster headlights straight out of a Stephen King novel was gunning down the road and eventually turned off of it, but Tony saw nothing but darkness. So, hopping back into the car, we drove around looking for anything. Eventually, we both realized there was a light behind us and thought it was a car. We were wrong. Tony realized what I thought was a car behind us had the watery glow, so he pulled over. Again, this light faded in and out and just seemed to hover brightly about a yard away from us. It was then I realized something. I didn't see just the bluish-white light, but also a yellow light that blinked, like a turning signal. So again, I was convinced this was a car returning to their home. Hell, we weren't even in the designated spot to flash our lights. It was like it followed us this whole time. So we drove off to the correct spot, and out of curiosity, we flashed our lights while the engine was on. This time, nothing happened, so we finally left. The next day, I had a friend at Miami University in Oxford hit the library for me. He ran into a librarian who had an entire manila folder full of people who saw the light. And yet there are no records of a motorcycle accident or a house burning down. Hell, the librarian lived in Oxford for 30 years and claimed she never even heard of an ambulance going down that road. So, that leaves me with this. The footage of a so-called magic light around an event that never took place. But then, ask yourself, what is it that haunts this road and that so many people have witnessed throughout the years? The haunted basement. I grew up in a house in Indiana. One day, my mother, my brother Chuck, and I were in the living room. It was late evening and we were watching TV when a loud noise startled us. It was like a loud clanging sound coming from down in the basement. We had a really musty old basement. Half of it was a dirt floor crawl space that opened into the poured concrete part of the basement. It was just a storage area full of old paint cans, fishing tackle, tools, storm windows, a big freezer that usually held a whole hog and a side of beef we'd picked up twice a year to live off of. There was a sump pit that the washer drained into, and the furnace and hot water heater were down there. The ceiling of it was just the exposed floor joists of the ground floor room, one of which we were sitting in when we heard this loud clanging noise from the basement. Startled, we went down to see what was going on. The stairs had no backs, just the treads, no risers. Our dog, a big German Shepherd, was always afraid to go down in that basement. She'd almost pitch a fit to have to go past that door to get out in the backyard. But there we were, me and Mom and Chuck, standing on those open back basement stairs, looking at the cement floor, where a single horseshoe was lying. The cement was chipped where it hit. It was spray-painted silver. We had a silver pair and a red pair for playing horseshoes, and these were real ones. They were heavy. We kept them hanging on a pair of nails driven into one of the exposed floor joists. As we stood there, the second silver one fell onto the first. That was startling. Freaky weird. Just as it happened, I saw a whitish line shoot up from the horseshoe already on the floor. Nobody else saw it, but to me it looked like some kind of shape reached up and tapped the other one. Sort of like looking at a thin man sideways. I can remember us talking back and forth about how maybe it was running through the dining room to the stairs and it might have knocked it off the nail. But we were on the stairs when it fell, and the nail it fell from was still just like it ought to be. A big 10-penny nail stuck in it at about a 45-degree angle. The horseshoe would have had to have walked up the nail and gotten themselves over the big nail head. My brother was taller than the rest of us and grabbed the nail to see if it was loose or could be twisted. It was tight as ever. We hung the silver ones back up, the same nail they fell from, and went back upstairs. I think we spent the rest of the evening waiting to hear if they were going to fall again or not. They never fell again that I know of, and it has been a month since anyone has played horseshoes. So, they've been on that nail a long time.